Good afternoon and welcome to South Dakota Perspective here on the Dakota Radio Group. I'm Jody Heemstra along with Governor Dennis Dugard here in the studio once again today. After some rains across much of the state over the weekend, some nice sunshine here in the capital city today. It's nice to see.
Yes, weather is a lot better these days than it's been. It's been a cool and wet spring, which is great for the drought conditions. We've seen the drought recede pretty handily, and that's been good. Now, I looked at the drought monitor this morning, and there's only 40% of the state now is short of moisture. Only 20% of that is in a moderate drought condition. Most of the state has adequate moisture, and in fact, I know there are quite a few farmers East River that want the rain to let up so they can get a dried out field to plant. And so planting is a little bit behind because of that, but better that than sustained drought.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about a trip you took to Washington, D.C. last week, focused on apprenticeships. Talk about the task force and the meeting and the information that you're helping to formulate.
Sure. Last year, President Trump created a task force that is led by the Secretary of Labor and also co-chaired by the Secretary of Education and the Secretary of Commerce at the federal level. And I was fortunate enough to be appointed as one of the task force members. Another governor was Kim Reynolds from Iowa. We were the only two governors appointed, but we also had representation from industry and labor. For example, the head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, CEO, was on it. The CEO of the Business Roundtable, which is the 200 largest employers in the nation, head of the Restaurant Association, head of the Hospitality Association, the head of America's Community Colleges was a member. So quite a few. Ivanka Trump, as senior advisor to the president, was also a member of the task force. We met a number of times, and our charge was look at ways that the apprenticeship model could be expanded or deregulated, if you will, to make it easier for employers and educators to create apprenticeships. And for your listeners who aren't familiar with it, most people think of apprenticeships, if they're familiar with it, as traditionally found in the building trades. So you might have an electrician, some young man or young woman that wants to become an electrician. They'll go to an electric company, and that company and they, he or she, will sign an apprenticeship agreement. So if I'm doing it, I'll sign my name, Dennis Dugard, and they say, Dennis, now you will be employed by us, we'll pay you, but you're committed to learning a certain curriculum, so you'll have to study at night maybe and study on the weekends, and you'll get some classes while you're working for us. You'll also work and apply what you've learned. So you'll wire houses, you'll wire businesses, you'll do labor under the supervision of an experienced electrician, and then you'll have to pass tests, and you earn while you learn. And then at some point, after you've been apprentice and done work and proven yourself knowledgeable through your studies, that you'll attain a journeyman's license, and you'll be a licensed electrician. Another path that someone could take, you could go to your technical school and pay for your technical education at the end of your education, then you pass tests and become licensed that way. So it's an alternative path where you earn while you learn instead of pay someone to teach you. It takes a little bit longer, but you don't incur the kind of debt you might have to otherwise incur at a more traditional study, test, become certified, and then start earning. And so we just this last week, we met with the three co-chairs, the Secretaries of Labor, Commerce, and Education, along with Ivanka Trump, for our final meeting of the task force. We'd been meeting through the course of the last 6 or 7 months. This was our final meeting in person in Washington, D.C., when we adopted the report that we presented then to the president. And we met with the president in the Rose Garden and gave him this report, and we took pictures. And the report essentially says, continue to pursue the kinds of apprenticeships you have today, which are registered apprenticeships. that you get through the Department of Labor in D.C., but also on a parallel course, create industry-approved apprenticeships. So let's say the drug industry or the pharmacy industry, the big players like Walgreens and Walmart and CVS could all come together and say, okay, let's create a curriculum and we'll create a pattern where we could have pharmacy techs get an apprenticeship working at our drugstore. Or you could have IBM and Microsoft and Amazon and others that are active in the information technology field come together and say, okay, let's create a curriculum for network administrators, for computer network administrators. And you could learn and earn your way to a certificate that demonstrates your knowledge in network computer network administration. And so we want to encourage that kind of pattern because today, I think most parents and young people see the four-year college as the primary way to prepare yourself for the working world. But there are really many paths. An apprenticeship is a path that's equally good. There's not just one road to heaven. There are many roads that can lead to heaven, and apprenticeships need to be better understood and more widely available, especially in areas like, say, information technology, where the nature of the curriculum has to change very rapidly, and it is changing very rapidly. And the ability of young people to afford a four-year degree is sometimes an issue. So this way, if a young person doesn't have the money to go to a four-year degree or is afraid of the debt that they might otherwise incur, and they also want to focus on something that clearly leads to a skill that will make them eligible for good jobs, apprenticeships is one path they should consider.
So now that you've helped formulate this report with the other members of the task force, now what? When, you know, is there a timeline as far as when we may see more apprenticeship opportunities available to, in some of the other industries beyond a lot of the building trades?
Well, yes. I think we're not waiting for this industry-approved apprenticeship pattern to emerge from some of these larger employers. For example, Dakota State University is working on some patterns that high school students can use while they're in high school. They can take dual credit in a network administration is an example, cybersecurity. There were a couple of others that they've identified, four different areas that have to do with information technology. High schoolers will be able to take these courses. And this summer, some of the staff in our Department of Labor are going to be helping the Sioux Falls school districts and other school districts, but primarily starting with Sioux Falls, look at employers that need IT employees and have them start hiring these high school students that can go to school and get these courses from Dakota State University and then apply what they've learned through job opportunities, whether it be after school or during the afternoons of a school day or during the summertime, and translate some of that learning plus on-the-job experience into an apprenticeship.
So some classroom and yet getting them out, especially, I think, great at the younger age, giving them some of the real world and what it's really like, you know, just so they know, hey, this is something I want to go into, or maybe this is something maybe not quite that I thought it was.
That's right. In fact, you hit on something that's very important. Increasingly, young people in their high school years often do not have employment experiences. And so those employment experiences, whether or not they lead to an understanding of a career that you might want to pursue later or they don't, they do teach the first-time employee very fundamental skills, showing up on time, the importance of communicating with your employer if you're sick or you want to take some time off, how to dress for the job, whether it's a dress-up or dress with work clothes or wear a protective gear or whatever it might be, how to interact with other employees on the job and work in a team. That's increasingly need and how to manage. Well, do I answer a personal cell phone call while I'm on the job, or do I not? Questions like that, those fundamental job skills that you learn by having a job. It might not be the job that you want to end up pursuing as your career, but any job teaches you some of those fundamental skills. The other thing about the apprenticeship approach is not only is it a job that teaches those fundamental skills, but it also applies something you've learned in the classroom. We all know that if you read about something but have no experience with it, it doesn't stay with you as long. So you have to imply repetition. Read it and read it again, study it, answer questions about it, repetition, repetition. But how much better it is if you experience it. So read how to wire a house and then wire it. Read how to connect two computers in a network, but then do it. And when you apply some kind of learning that you've just received, it stays with you and you understand some nuances about it that maybe aren't even in the coursework. You know, if I'm wiring these two, if I shave this wire a little bit shorter, it'll work better next time when I connect it to the connector. Those sorts of nuances you can only gain by application of learning rather than just learning without application.
Well, speaking of learning and continuing a person's education, the Grants for Grads program is something that could play in for a lot of people out there. First, for those who haven't heard of it, what is the Grants for Grads program?
Thank you for asking. The Grants for Grads program was a program that was started by the South Dakota Housing Development Authority, and it recognizes a couple of things. One, it's important to tie people to our communities through home ownership. We generally find that people who own their own home have pride of ownership, and they take care of things more because it belongs to them. They'll watch their lawn. They'll keep litter away. And if you're a renter, you don't care so much. So home ownership in itself is good for our communities. It also recognizes that graduates, especially if they have some student loan debt, maybe have a hard time affording the down payment on a home. And yet, those are the kinds of people we want to get their first jobs in South Dakota, if possible, especially if they came from out of state. If we can get their first job to be here in South Dakota, we have a much better likelihood of keeping him here. And for those parents and grandparents out there like me, we want our children and grandchildren to stay in South Dakota so we can be close to them. So for all those reasons, the South Dakota Housing Development Authority took some assets that they had received from a federal grant, and they can borrow out in the marketplace at advantageous interest rates. And they borrowed at a rate that was even more advantageous than they thought they would get. So they ended up with a little bit of an arbitrage profit, it's called. And they have to apply it in some way that benefits the citizens of the state. And so they created this Grants for Grads program with the money they had. And what it is, it essentially gives to certain people who qualify. You have to have graduated from your tech school or your college in the last 5 years. You have to meet certain income requirements. They're not really low income, but you have to be moderately low income. And you're purchasing a primary residence in South Dakota, and you haven't owned a house for the past 3 years. So it's probably your first home. And then your house has to cost $250,000 or less. So, you know, these days, what do houses cost? Something probably between $100,000 and $200,000 for your starter home. And so that's what you're looking at. And with that, you get a grant of up to 5% of your home price. And it's something you can use as part of your down payment or to reduce the loan that you'd otherwise have to take out.
So how does a person get some more information if a recent graduate, and by recent, it could be just in the past few weeks or past few years.
That's right.
How do they get some details?
I think the simplest things would be to just go to your web browser and just type in Grants for Grads, South Dakota, or even Grants for Grads would probably get you to the right web page. It'll get you to the South Dakota Housing Development Authority web page, which describes in greater detail how you qualify and how you go about getting this gift of money to help you buy a house in South Dakota.
Now, is this open for people, whether they think they're going to, or they have their job and they're getting their first home in Pier or Oneida or Rapid City or Watertown? Does it cover cities and towns throughout the entire state of South Dakota?
Yes, anywhere within the boundary of state of South Dakota. And it doesn't, you don't have to be a graduate that's 22. You can be a graduate that's 45, but you have to have graduated and you have to have a low income requirement and you can't have owned a house. We're not using this program to help you step up to a higher and nicer house. It's really intended for people who are probably getting their first home and give them a chance to have access to that when they might not otherwise be financially able to do it.
Well, on another topic of money, switching to teacher pay, some interesting news for South Dakota out in the past few weeks where our teacher salaries were not ranked 51st in the nation anymore. We've moved up a few notches, but it's not the bottom, Governor.
Yes, really for decades we've been 51st. When you include Washington, D.C. teachers, we were even worse than anyone in the nation, including Washington, D.C. So we were 51st year after year after year. And then finally in 2016, we had in 2015 formed the Blue Ribbon Task Force. And then 2016 passed some pretty substantial reformation of our school funding formula, including a significant increase in the amount of money paid to teachers. And it also really, it gives school districts enough money that they could pay an average of about $48,000 if they're staffed appropriately according to their number of students. Now, if you've got a school district whose enrollment is declining, they might lose 20 students over a couple of years, but they may not have downsized by one teacher during that period of time. So they would have enough if they're staffing up and staffing down as their school population changes. Not always easy to do, but if they're able to do that and they have the right proportion of students for their teachers, they should be able to pay about the average in the nation. Now, not everybody can do that, and it takes time to get into that posture, but we're a lot better shape than we were. We increased by the second largest percentage of all the states. North Carolina was at 4.2%, but the largest dollar increase was, the second largest was New York at $2,750, and we jumped by more than twice that. So
it's not just a little difference in South Dakota. It's a fairly substantial difference.
Right. If you look at just the raw numbers, we moved to 48th. Now you think, well, gosh, that's not very good progress. But the jump from 51st to 48th took a lot of money. Now, if you want to go from 48 to 47 or 46, not nearly as much money. And if you have to remember, too, South Dakota has two different advantages where those dollar values have to be adjusted. Number one, we don't have an income tax. And so if you compare exactly the same amount in Minnesota as you get in South Dakota, you're much better off in South Dakota because Minnesota won't take some of that for their state income tax. Secondly, our costs in South Dakota are much lower than the national average. Some states like New York and California, Hawaii, D.C., we talked about them, they might be 12% or 15% higher than the national average, and we're 12% lower than the national average. So really, when you account for those things, we come up to 29th after you adjust for income taxes and cost of living. So we're almost in the middle of the pack.
Now we just got to stay there.
Yes. Now we just got to stay there.
But that's up to the legislature. So
right, right.
We'll let them do that math. So, well, let's tourism. We talked about sunshine at the beginning of the show here, getting some sunshine, some temperatures in the 70s. School's starting to get out. People are going to start traveling. And I know recently you were at the State Tourism Conference with Secretary Jim Hagan.
Yes.
And talking about what we're looking forward to and expecting for 2018. What's the good word right now?
Yeah. Well, the good word is the tourism season looks to be a good one this year. Our reservations are looking good. Visitation numbers are starting to look good. Inquiries are way up. Just by way of example, I called Jim Hagan when I saw his monthly report. I said, is this number right? Because I couldn't believe it. Requests for people still ask for those visitor guide booklets. And the number of visitor guide booklets requested in April of 2018 was more than 100% above what it was a year ago, 100% more. So I said to Jim, was there a problem last year or no? He said, one thing that we're doing a lot better with is our targeting of people. We're surveying and understand what is the nature of our visitor. Is it someone who's in a certain age range? Is it someone who likes to motorcycle? Is it someone who is really interested in history? Are they interested in sports? Are they coming here for concerts? What's bringing the visitor? And if you've got a visitor that likes concerts, what is that visitor like? What's their age range? What's their income level? What states are they coming from? So if we can identify some of those key demographic facts about, say, a concert goer, then we can promote future concerts to that same demographic, even though it might be Dennis maybe never came to South Dakota concert. But if I match up in terms of the age range and my interests match the kind of people who are coming, odds are pretty high I would come if I knew about it. And so we are doing some of the most sophisticated targeting of new prospects for tourism than we've ever done before. And I really give credit to Jim Hagan and the Department of Tourism and our tourism contractors, Lawrence and Schiller, just doing a great job of targeting. And so, you know, the big data, you hear about big data and how it can be worrisome about your privacy and all that, but it can also be helpful to me to help me know what's available that I might be interested in. And so people might come to South Dakota and sign up for email here. And if the more we know about that person, the better we can understand what they might like to hear about and see, and then send those targeted messages to them so that we might attract them back as a tourist again or to South Dakota for the very first time.
Because one set of visitors may enjoy camping and hiking and want, you know, those kind of options, and the next one may be more interested in like you said, concerts and movies and theater and that sort of thing. So right. we can instead of getting all of these emails or things that you may not be interested in and you just kind of quit looking at them, now you're getting things you're interested in, so you're actually reading the information about South Dakota.
That's right. Sure, you know, as people age, they maybe aren't as interested or able to do all the physical things that, say, a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old would be able to do, but they might have a higher interest in history or in culture, things that they can enjoy watching or observing. And so, again, if you know the demographic of the typical user of a South Dakota tourism niche, you can pitch that niche to others who have that same demographic makeup.
Is the Black Hills area still kind of the big, you know, the big target destination is for tourism in South Dakota? Although all parts of the state see it, but is the Black Hills still?
Well, it depends. You know, it depends upon what you consider. Now, some people would not consider shoppers as tourists, but it's a fact that the Empire Mall in Sioux Falls is a huge draw for retail trade from Iowa and Minnesota, Nebraska, and South Dakota. And so we want to be sure we attract people who are interested in retail. Also, our sports complex in Sioux Falls is also a huge draw from the Sanford Pentagon to the Premier Center. And the Premier Center, of course, is also a huge draw because of concerts now. And so it's still true, though, that the Black Hills, when you think of a tourist, you're thinking of someone who's on vacation, driving around, looking at things and touring. And for that kind of a person, if you define that person as a tourist, we're clearly South Dakota's the draw, with Crazy Horse and Mount Rushmore being the icon that it is. When people think of South Dakota, if they think of anything, if they have an impression that's founded on any factual basis, it's probably founded on a knowledge that that's where Mount Rushmore is, and that's where I'd like to go sometime and see Mount Rushmore. And so then they see other things in South Dakota because of that draw to Mount Rushmore.
Well, as we're getting people to Mount Rushmore and the western side of the state here for tourism, just that's kind of the area of the state we think of when we think of, or most of us, when we think of wildfire potential, and May is Wildfire Awareness Month. And you touched on the drought lessening here over the last few months in South Dakota, thanks to some nice rains. Just some reminders, some thoughts about Wildfire Awareness Month.
Yes, this is a time of year when we try to remind everybody about the danger of wildfire. As people start to camp again, they start to have campfires, as people start to be tourists again, there's a danger from a discarded cigarette or some other spark by mechanical equipment, whether it be a lawnmower or a farm implement that's driven over rocky ground. Anything that can cause a spark is potentially the ignition for a wildfire. And your listeners might be surprised to learn, as I was as governor, that South Dakota has hundreds of wildfires every year. It's not unusual to have 300 or 400 or even 500 wildfires. Now, most of them are quite small and are extinguished themselves. They burn out themselves, or they're put out by someone who sees them in time and stops them. But we literally have hundreds and hundreds of wildfires, and most of them are human-caused. We think of thunderstorms, and lightning does cause wildfire, particularly in the hills and out on the plains. If you've got a dry area and you get a lightning strike, even though oftentimes it's accompanied by rain, sometimes it's not, or sometimes the rain isn't enough to extinguish a wildfire, and it can grow. And so really, it's the kind of thing that people have to be attentive to. If you're going to have a campfire, be absolutely sure that the fire is out and douse it with water. Don't let it burn out overnight because you're going to bed. Put it out. If you're going to smoke, you know, dispose of your cigarette butts or cigars properly. If you're going to use mechanized equipment, be aware of the danger of fire and be prepared to fight it. So if you do create a spark, you've got a fire extinguisher or a hose ready to extinguish that. So we don't have fires that grow like the fire that destroyed quite a bit of Custer State Park's undergrowth. Happily, most of that fire did not get up into the treetops and burned on the ground, and most of it was slow enough burning that it cleared underbrush that is probably a healthy thing in some ways. But much of the park still was damaged by the Legion Lake fire. And if we can prevent any kind of a fire like that from starting, we're better off. In a year that we have drought, and again, happily, we are receding from a drought condition. In a year that we can have drought, we can have 2 and 3 or 4 times as many wildfires as you may in a normal year. But even in a normal year, you're going to have hundreds of wildfires, most of them human-caused.
But touching on tourism and wildfire, and you just mentioned the Legion Lake fire there at Custer State Park. Just so people know, Custer State Park, it's open. It's ready for people to come see it. It's greening up. The animals are there. Come on out, right?
Yes. There are some areas of the park where the fire got very hot. And in those cases, the survival of the underlying grass root system is compromised. But most of the fire did not get that hot. It burned off the surface, just like if you burned your lawn off, it would regreen the following summer. The roots would survive. And that's what happened in Custer State Park. Most of the grass roots did survive. And so it looks even better than ever. And happily, because of a grant from the Helmsley Trust, we had a very generous grant from the Helmsley Trust. Walter and Tina Penzier are South Dakota residents, and they gave a generous grant to help us reseed some areas and protect other areas from erosion, because those are natural outgrowths of a fire. And so our Custer State Park recovery is going to be accelerated much better than it would otherwise have recovered on its own.
Excellent. Well, on the topic, related topic of the outdoors and things going on, the mountain pine beetle epidemic out in the western side of the state has pretty well waned, no longer an epidemic. I mean, there's still control measures going on. Now we've got something going on the eastern side of the state with emerald ash borer appearance in Sioux Falls. Emerald ash borer, a ferocious invasive pest, killing ash trees in about 32 states across the country. What does emerald ash borer mean for those of us in the central part of South Dakota as we start to travel and go camping and bring firewood to and bring firewood from, things like that?
Well, first of all, I would say that this year we've seen the very first occurrence confirmed of emerald ash borer in South Dakota. We've seen it coming from the east. It's marching ever westward. And we knew it existed in Minnesota. We think what may have brought it to South Dakota was probably the year that we had that tremendous ice storm in South Dakota. It's very possible when so many tree crews came in from other states to help clear away some of the damaged wood, they may have brought some ash, emerald ash borer with them. That's just a guess. It could have been brought in by any means. It could have been someone who went to Minnesota or went to a state that had emerald ash borer and bought some firewood to bring back home to burn in their fireplace or their wood stove, and inadvertently they brought those emerald ash borers with them. But we do know it's been confirmed in Sioux Falls, and so there is a quarantine now on all of Minnehaha County and parts of Lincoln and Turner County, in which we're asking citizens to quarantine their ash tree movement. And that is, if you have to cut an ash tree down, please don't cut it down until after Labor Day when we've got frost and freezing temperatures that will help contain the bug. And during the summertime, do not move ash around at all outside that area. We don't want to carry emerald ash borers to other parts of the state. In the meantime, it's good for communities and individual property owners to be aware that green ash trees are at risk. And so, for example, at my home, I haven't planted an ash tree in 20 years because I know eventually I'll probably see green ash trees be attacked by the emerald ash borer. And so I plant a variety of trees. So if you're a city counselor, or if you're a parks manager, or if you're a homeowner and you're thinking about trees, it's always good to plant a variety of species and avoid ash at this point. Just as we avoid elm trees that are not hybrid elm, that are Dutch elm resistant. So we had at the Capitol grounds, as example, four years ago now, we had a tremendous windstorm come through Pier on the heels of a very wet month and a half. And so the ground was saturated, roots were loose in saturated soft ground, and we had over 100 trees down in the Capitol complex alone, many more elsewhere in Pier. And so we have planted several hundred trees on the Capitol grounds. None of them are green ash. And they are represented by a tremendous variety. We never plant more than three of the same kind of tree in one location. There's some exceptions to that where, for example, along the governor's mansion drive on Capitol and on Washington, we've got all one species of a flowering tree. But elsewhere, you'll never see more than three linden together. You'll never see three hackberry together, more than three. So you want to plant maple and all kinds. You could plant Norway maple. You could plant silver maple. You could plant hackberry, honey locust, Kentucky coffee tree, all kinds of different varieties of trees. And that's the ticket. When my grandparents came from Denmark and bought our farm back over 100 years ago, they planted almost all ash and elm. And so all the elm are gone. We don't have a single elm tree on the property, and we used to have probably 100. And the ash trees are dying because they're old, and I won't plant any new ones because I know that eventually the emerald ash borer will probably come. So stay away from ash for now. Plant diversity if you're planting, and exclude ash. And then if you're in Minnehaha, Lincoln, or Turner counties, be attentive to the ash trees that you have, and don't move them, and don't let other people move them to you. And let's try and contain this emerald ash borer as long as we can. We know it'll eventually move and find its way, but let's contain it as long as we can.
We don't need to make it easy for it.
That's right.
And I know one way that it could move quite easily is through firewood. And I know the Department of Agriculture, the Forestry Division there, has always been very adamant about, you know, buy your firewood where you go and camp, and then if you don't burn it all, just leave it there. Don't bring it home, especially now if you're camping down that Sioux Falls area and then coming back, leave the firewood so you...
That's right. Buy it where you get, when you get there, and leave it when you go.
Absolutely. Well, let's touch on, it's an election, I don't know if you knew this, but it's an election year.
I think you're right.
It rings a bell, doesn't it? But voter registration deadline is coming up quite quickly, and although you won't be on the ballots, you'd still like to see people vote.
Oh, yes, no question about it. Early voting is available now, and so people should be able. It used to be when I was first starting to vote in South Dakota, you had to have a reason for absentee balloting. Now you need no reason except for convenience. If you want to vote earlier than Election Day, you certainly can, and you're encouraged to do that. You never know. The weather might be bad. You might be sick. Something might come up that calls you away. So get the voting done early if you can, and make your opinion known.
Absolutely. Check out the Secretary of State's website. You can see your absentee ballot or your ballot that you'll have in voting location. Just a lot of great information available if you go to the State of South Dakota website.
Right. And if you want to vote early, you don't need to make an appointment ahead of time. You can just show up at your county auditor's office, and they'll have ballots there for you, and you can vote anytime. You can also request a ballot be mailed to you, and you can vote from home if you want. Now, that takes a little forethought. You have to ask for that to be done. But if you're out and about and you want to just stop by the county courthouse, do that, and you can get your voting done at any time.
And you can say, you can put your I voted sticker on early then, and
that's right.
And away you go. Well, one thing, speaking here locally at Pier, anyway, one thing on our ballot June 5th is going to be the water treatment plant.
Yes.
The city commission gave the voters of Pier the decision on whether or not they would like to build this water treatment facility. It's not a state government issue, Governor, but as a resident of Pier these past years, and as someone who is, you know, familiar with the governmental structure, some thoughts and some ideas on this.
Well, I don't know if you're interested. I'm going to vote yes on that. I think it does make sense to invest in good, clean drinking water. I was a little bit disappointed when I first started coming to Pier to see the quality of the water is as poor as it is. And even though it's not unsafe to drink, it's certainly distasteful to drink, and it stains everything that it touches. It stains our sidewalks, the sides of your house. It stains anything that it hits. Last night, we had our grandkids over, and the two-year-old, whose birthday was this weekend, said for her birthday she wanted a bath in Grandma's big bathtub. And so Linda took the kids up to get a bath, and she said the water was brown and it looked dirty, and she said, I just didn't feel good about putting the kids down in that water. I know they... I think it was the YMCA even brought water over from Fort Pier to fill their swimming pool. And it still looks bad because of the staining that occurred prior to that. So I just look at our fundamental things that you need to live. Certainly you need food, you need water, you need shelter and clothing, and water is the most fundamental of all. And so if we have to sacrifice a little bit in terms of not going out to eat one night a month or spending less money, I think about the money you'd save on water softener or on bottled water that you might be buying. So in my opinion, it's worth the investment to invest in clean water for this community.
Absolutely. Again, South Dakota Governor Dennis Dugard in the studio here on the Dakota Radio Group, the South Dakota Perspective Program. Governor, any final tidbits of information or advice before I let you go and we wait till next month to chat with you again?
Well, we talked about tourism a little bit earlier. Now is one of the best times of year to be in South Dakota. It's just beautiful weather. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. Everything is turning green and lush and beautiful. And so I just encourage everybody to be outside and enjoy this beautiful state because many places in the world don't have a place as beautiful as South Dakota.
Absolutely. South Dakota Perspective here on the Dakota Radio Group with Governor Dennis Dugard. Thank you so much for coming in again this month. Sure appreciate it.
Thanks, Jody. It's good to be with you.
I'm Jody Heemstra on the Dakota Radio Group.